This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
No more pronouns. No more climate change obsession. No more emergency vaccine mandates. No more dudes in dresses. We're done with that.
I love that. That is Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. And I'm not even sure when he said that, but I found that soundbite when I was heading back here in the last couple of days. You know, Stu, what's frustrating about the show today, and hopefully it doesn't sound as bad as I think it sounds, is when I was heading back on the airplane last night, I told you I didn't sleep, which is one of my issues.
Yeah.
So we leave, it was like I don't even know when we left. It doesn't matter. But I'm on the airplane. I'm sending stuff to Ethan and to Fred. And I'm so psyched. I actually thought, man, if you give me a microphone on this flight right now, I can do the show. And I was very collated in my brain what I wanted to do. And then today it just all went away because of the sleep deprivation. But I love that soundbite. And I think we're going to probably hear that in a show open in the future because it really does sum up a lot. But there's no better person than our next guest to catch up on some of the politics, not only of the past week that I've missed on, but certainly the politics of today, because there's been a couple of things, obviously, the selection of the Pope and others that have gone on. Dwayne Patterson with HotAir.com. He's the host of the Dwayne's World podcast. He works with Mr. Hugh Hewitt every day. Hello, Dwayne. How are you? Welcome back to the show.
I am doing great. Welcome back from Greece, and I'm sorry you didn't find a pope there.
Well, let me get started with that just a little bit, because there's been some conflicting information, which is rather important to us here in St. Louis, probably less important to the national audience or to
He's
you out
Cubs
on the left
fan.
Coast.
He's a Cubs fan.
No, but wait a second. We have new information that indicates his brother says he's a Sox fan. So actually, I don't think it's definitive
so
right
you
now.
You breathe a sigh of relief, yes.
Because the Cubs went out there on their scoreboard, but the sign outside of Wrigley, and they said he's a Cubs fan. But I think we may be okay, but we'll have to see what happens. Any thoughts on that? I'm not a Catholic. I don't quite understand all the important. I mean, I understand it, but I don't really get it completely in my mind. Anything to say about the choice of the new pope?
Nor am I. Hugh, the host of the show I do produce, is. And he brought me on the air yesterday and was talking about this. Oh, this may take years to be able to get a new pope. And I'm like, you're nuts. And he goes, why? And I said, because when Francis had his episode where he had double pneumonia and he was, you know, one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel, everybody has cell phones. Everybody has email. Everybody has text. They all went through this drill knowing that the end was probably near, and then he kind of had a little bounce back for a little while, and they realized, okay, he's going to be fine for a little while. But they just went through this drill. They kind of already talked they didn't have a conclave, but they all communicated. They probably already had a short list among them of who it was going to be, so it was not a big surprise. It's not like 40 years ago before cell phones, and they couldn't communicate.
You know, that is such a great point. And I think what happens is we sometimes think that, you know, people who are cardinals or bishops or whatever they might be in different organizations or in the Catholic Church, that they don't pay attention to technology. And Scott Jennings even said earlier, and I didn't know this, that apparently the guy has tweeted. So he's been active on Twitter.
Absolutely. They do use tech to their advantage. And look, they text, they call, they do all that stuff. They email. The Archbishop of Philadelphia, Archbishop Charles Chaput, is a good friend of the show. We've known him for a long time. He listens online. We text him back and forth. They do know how to use the modern day conveniences.
Well, on the topic of your show, you've had a couple of big name guests here the last couple of days, haven't you?
Well, you know, we had this. Donnie from Queens was on yesterday.
Was J.D. Vance on today? So you had the president on yesterday, and J.D. Vance on today, or is he on tomorrow?
He's scheduled to be on tomorrow. He's been kind of making a hit. He was on with Martha McCallum on Fox a little earlier today. We have him scheduled to be on tomorrow. Knock on wood, that all goes well. That would be the first show in North America that I know of, a radio show that has had both the sitting president and the sitting vice president on in the same week. Take that, Fred.
Yeah, I know. I love that. Well, Fred's been very, very busy today because of everything with the Pope. He also serves as the religion editor on our sister station, KMOX. And Sue, he told us he's going to be here like all night, right?
Yeah, that's what he said. I thought that was excessive. But here's the thing. They want him all over CBS,
right.
He's great for that.
Yeah, he's doing some of the network stuff as well.
Well, okay. If you're going to buy that, sure.
Well, what? This is where I like you as a grounding force, because you had to kind of bring me back to reality even before the election. You've done it a couple of times. But before I left for this trip, there was a lot. And I think I'm going to hear tomorrow on our roundtable from some of my panelists. Oh, Trump's losing, you know, even on the immigration issue. People are peeling off, yada, yada, yada. There's nothing that's going well. Well, that's not necessarily a representation of reality or even close. But, Dwayne, I'll tell you, when I was watching some of the international coverage on the English language stations that I could find over there, whether it was BBC World, they had a couple others, there was nothing that even resembled an ounce of reality of what's really happening in this country. You get this impression not only from what they did over there, but even in the legacy media here, that everyone's jumped off the Trump ship, even if you voted for him because you thought you wanted some change. Nobody supports him anymore. He's got the worst polling numbers ever in history. But haven't we gone down this path with the legacy media being wrong and wrong and wrong and lying and lying and lying before?
So we've been saying for, you know, a long time that the left has lost its mind. They are going insane, right? And so one of the classical definitions of insane is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. They have been throwing mud at Trump in the media and making stuff up since going down the escalator in 2015. And it hasn't worked. He's just as popular as he was. He's actually more effective than he was. And so what are they doing? They're just throwing more mud up against the wall, expecting that somewhere along the way something is going to stick. Last night on MSNBC, not to completely hog the time here, last night on MSNBC, Jen Psaki, former press secretary for Joe Biden, does this monologue and says, what's Donald Trump done? He calls himself a deal maker. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't made any deals, not one. He hasn't done a darn thing. That was last night. This morning, he completely upends everything with the UK, and it's a magnificent deal. If you actually look at the details of it, there's lots of good stuff in it, and it looks like a pretty equitable deal. I saw people on CNBC saying that Biden for 4 years tried to renegotiate with the UK, and they wouldn't have any of it. So the first one comes along, and then on MSNBC this morning, after Jen Psaki says nothing, he hasn't done a darn thing, the deal comes out. Morning Joe's John Heilman comes out and says, well, fine, it's the UK. That's like low-hanging fruit. Anybody could have done that. I mean, you can't please any of these people. They're just going to make stuff up.
Well, not only that, but you know, when they make stuff up, it affects the people, obviously, that are paying attention to those outlets. And I've used this example a couple of times, and I don't want to be repetitive. I'm going to claim that the jet lag is the reason. But I did think this was interesting. And I'm on this trip with a bunch of people here in the last 10 days, many of whom are on my side of politics because they, you know, they listen to the show. Now, not everyone in our group was listeners. So some of them did not like Trump. So we try to avoid some of this talk at dinner, et cetera. But then even when I'm, and I don't like to pick on my friends, but this was something that happened yesterday. So as we're heading back, I see this information about the party that he wants to throw for the 250th anniversary. And I brought that up, or somehow it came up as we're getting onto our last flight, and somebody says, oh, you mean on his birthday? So the focus becomes completely on his birthday, as if the interpretation is, oh, yeah, see what Trump did? He wanted to make sure that he's celebrating his own birthday, like they're manufacturing the day in history when the army actually was developed, or the day in history when we signed, you know, whatever. It's just unbelievable because they're so anti-Trump and so consumed, they can't see straight, and they don't really want to know any of the real information. They just have no desire.
No, they have it. The anti-Trump Inc. force out there, whether it's elected Democrats, media, or Never Trumpers, are all part of the same group when it comes to anti-Trump Inc. They have so put themselves out on that limb, and they don't care if the rest of the tree burns down. They have left themselves no ground to be able to kind of rejoin the rest of the world. They're so emotionally invested in that narrative that you just can't talk them out of it. They've just it has just snapped a whole bunch of people. It's unfortunate, but, you know, again, does that mean the president does everything that we like every day?
Of course not.
There's things that that he says and does all the time that I just kind of wince a little bit at. But as far as his track record, you know what? As far as these tariffs, he put us in a position to be able to kind of force the UK, the first of many that I'm hearing is coming, to renegotiate a trade deal that seems a lot more equitable to U.S. interests. And why wouldn't we want that? Why wouldn't we celebrate that?
Where are we currently? And this is just a legitimate question because I've been out of the loop, and I don't know where we are, but where are we on our friend Abrego Garcia? Is that something that's still being discussed, or have they been thoroughly humiliated with all the information that's come out that they're backing off on that on the other side?
Well, basically, everybody except one has given up on this. Chris Van Hollen was in a Senate hearing yesterday and is still going down that road, still making the claim that the government never made the case that he's a member of MS-13, which is just factually untrue. It's just nonsense. Two different courts have established as a point of fact in their findings, both the District Immigration Court and the Appellate Immigration Court accepted the government's findings that he is a member of MS-13. It's not disputed in court. So Chris Van Hollen's just lying about that. He's just not telling the truth. But he says, "Oh, I'm not here to defend the guy's actions. I'm not a character reference for it. I just want my due process." That's his claim to make. Everybody else in the Democratic Party has done the Monty Python Holy Grail. Run away!
Yeah,
run
right.
Away! You had Pramila Jayapal on MSNBC earlier this week while you were in Greece. And she was one of these people saying, bring him back. She wanted to go on a Codel to El Salvador and grandstand and all this stuff. And so an MSNBC anchor asked her about, you know, how we're starting to hear mixed messaging from the Democrats on Abrego Garcia. They don't seem as fervent as they once were. What's going on? And Pramila Jayapal says, well, the Democratic Party is here to talk about the working families. We're here to talk about how to do a better living wage. And she's going back to every talking point the Democrats talked about, except illegal immigration. The party has now seen the polling on this. It's horrific for them. And they're running away.
Well, you
everybody
know,
except Van Hollen.
If you took, and this is another one of those things, where if you took Trump out of the mix, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form arguing that the Constitution should not be followed, all right, just to be clear. But if you took Trump out of the mix, and it was literally anyone else, and you presented the legacy media with a story about a gangbanger who, you know, also abused his wife and was trafficking people, and we have video of this, I mean, come on. Some of this stuff isn't too tough to call. But if anyone else was involved, there would be coverage of saying, yeah, you know what, maybe we shouldn't have this guy in this country. Do you want this guy living next to you, Chris Van Hollen? But with Trump, they do everything possible to make sure that the American people only know a sliver of the facts, a sliver of the information. And if something pops that might look like that narrative is taking a different turn, well, we're not going to tell people that information. We won't show them the traffic stop or whatever the situation might be.
there wouldn't even be any coverage because it wouldn't even be controversial if a different person did it. Biden did deport some people that were violent. Barack Obama deported illegal aliens that had criminal records by the millions, and media doesn't want to talk about that.
Yeah, so I don't even know how you change some of this, because they're not going to change, and you know the coverage is still going to be imbalanced. They're going to continue to go against Trump. How did he do? Here's a legit question, because I didn't see the whole interview. I saw clips. How do you think Trump did with Kristen Welker? Because he was on Meet the Press, wasn't he?
He was on Meet the Press, and every question, my column in Hot Air earlier this week was kind of a fun one. It highlighted Clint Eastwood singing Accentuate the Positive from Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil from 1997. Yes, he actually did sing in that. It was actually kind of a fun cover. But whenever Kristen Welker would pose a question, it was always, well, you're failing on this. Everybody thinks you suck on that. Everybody thinks that this is wrong. And Trump finally said, every question you ask is negative. You can't find one positive thing going on, like this, and he starts going down the list of all the good things that are happening. And there's plenty of good things that are happening. And she just won't have any of it, because if you're a member of the D.C. establishment, Donald Trump is your mortal threat, and everything has to be a five-alarm fire. It's just it starts to, after a period of time, with a lot of people that are watching this, it's boy that cried wolf. If you think that every single thing that Trump does is the end of democracy as we know it, and it really isn't, as another day unfolds and everything is just fine, well, then you start to not believe the people telling you, you know, that the boy cried wolf all the time.
Well, even on the Army celebration, the 250th anniversary, I was thinking about this. I mean, how as an American, and I was just in Greece, where they're very proud of their heritage. They're very proud of their history. But here we have to continually apologize for our history. We have to say, I'm sorry. We're never, never quite good enough. But I don't know why anybody who is an American, who would be proud to be an American, we're going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the country next year, would be opposed to celebrating, like, to President Trump's point, the rest of the country is, or the rest of the world is celebrating some of these things. But because he's got that birthday that coincides, none of that matters. And all of a sudden, we're against celebrating the history of our armed forces. That's what happens.
Well, and you see, I don't think that's where the country is, because I flew, what was it, 5-6 months ago. I had to take a flight across the country from California. And in the airport where I was at, there was a group of people that were doing one of these honor flights. You know, where the last remaining World War II veterans get flown back to go see the World War II memorial before it's too late for them. And whenever you see one of these, you can always see these viral videos that are online of all these vets and all these people, and people stand up and applaud for them. Because we do love what the military does. We respect the hell out of the military here. And that's not an ideological thing. That's not a political thing. When you're actually in the airport, you don't have people throwing tomatoes at people coming back. It's not like it was back in the Vietnam era days. We respect the service of people that serve and put on the uniform, no matter how old they are. And so when you hear people try to Trumpify everything, I think it just falls on deaf ears. You can't, if everything is an existential threat to democracy, then nothing is.
Well, it's ridiculous. It really is, and it gets exhausting after a while. Anything else that popped from that interview with Trump that you would like to highlight?
Well, the one that we did from yesterday with Hugh is everybody made all sorts of noise about some of the things he said about different people. He said Chuck Schumer is basically a Palestinian. You should just go ahead and give him the garb. And everybody got the vapors over that. What he did say of import that you need to take away is on Iran, if there's any kind of a deal, he's only got one thing that he will accept. And that is, you can either have us blow up your nuclear program peacefully, nicely, Or if you don't do it that way, we will be vicious about it, and we're still going to blow it up. But one way or the other, it's going to get blown up. There's nothing else that he's going to accept.
That's actually
kind of telling.
Yeah, here's one soundbite on the topic of Iran.
I would much prefer a strong, verified deal where we actually blow them up, or just denuke them. But the other there are only two alternatives there: blow them up nicely or blow them up vicious.
Well, that's basically what you have, right?
And that's the news out of to me as a news guy, as one that likes foreign policy. That was the news hook out of the entire 30 minutes we had with him. Now, I'm not sure everybody else. I'm tickled to death that you guys grabbed that poll. That makes me happy that you found that poll. But not a lot of people in media found that.
Not a shock there. All right, Dwayne, hey, thanks for catching up with me today. My brain's not completely functioning. We're going to talk maybe in more detail next week about some of these things once things settle down. But thank you so much. And have fun with the vice president tomorrow.
You got it. Welcome back.
Take care. That's Dwayne Patterson, who is with us on a regular basis from hotair.com. He hosts the Dwayne's World podcast and also works with Mr. Hugh Hewitt on a regular basis. We're going to take a break here. Sue's got traffic. We're coming back with our own expert on the Pope. That would be Fred Bottenheimer, because he's the religion expert at KMOX and the religion editor. We have audio cut of the day coming up as well.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigators Later.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, I don't even know if I've promoted the Reardon Roundtable. This has been a bit of a whirlwind of a show. My first day back after that international trip to Greece, which was fantastic. We'll talk a little bit more about the Greece trip tomorrow. I got some stories that I want to share. But I have a lot of audio that I want to share this afternoon, because there's some really good stuff. Some of it's a little serious. Some of it is less serious. Some of it is fun. I'm going to get to all of it here and try to do a little whirlwind.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Some of this has a bit of a theme, and with no disrespect to the Catholics, I have already played some audio related to the Pope, so that's not going to be featured here today. But there's like a little bit of a theme going on with some things that are happening out there, including in Colorado, where you're going to allow school teachers. This is a bill that is now passed the legislature in Colorado, going to the governor's desk, that allows teachers and counselors to change a child's name without the parents knowing about this. What in the world are we thinking? How can anyone think that that's a good idea? Now, I'm going to play you a Republican lawmaker in Colorado in a second, but I want to start with the guy who is in charge of USA Fencing, because I don't know if you heard this yesterday. They had a hearing, and Marjorie Taylor Greene was the chair of this particular committee, and they asked the guy, his name is Damian Liard or something like that, who's in charge of USA Fencing. Remember, we had the fencer that basically said, no, I'm not competing against a biological male. So just listen to this. Now, I'm going to tell you, Sue, you haven't heard this. Most people have not heard this audio. In a fair media world, someone would air this clip, but they won't.
Liefeld, do you think forcing a woman to change in front of a man in a locker room is abusive? Yes or no?
Congresswoman, I'm not sure.
Do you want your daughter to change in front of biological men?
Let me just do that again. Did you hear what he said?
No, I didn't.
He said, listen to him. He says, I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Uh-huh.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Liefeld, do you think forcing a woman to change in front of a man in a locker room is abusive? Yes or no?
Congresswoman, I'm not sure.
Do you want your daughter to change in front of biological men in locker rooms? Yes or no?
My daughter isn't really something that should be part of this hearing, respectfully.
If you're not a quick no on that, we're going to take that as a no.
Yeah, well, she meant is if you're not a quick yes on that, she just reversed it. But he could not even answer a simple question. So then there's this guy in Colorado who actually tried to make a case that, you know what, we name our kids. As parents, we name our kids. We should kind of maybe have, I don't know, just a little say in whether they change their name or just be notified if they change their name, right?
A piece that's still in this bill that was in the original version is section 6, and it talks about name changes in schools. And I ran an amendment that said you have to have parental consent to change your name in school if you are a child. And that amendment was defeated. Now, let me be clear to the members in here. In my family, names have a meaning. There's a tradition there. I named my children. Who are any of you to tell me that my child can go to school and change their name without my even knowledge? Who are any of you to say that? I gave them their names. I was there when they were born. I was there when they said their first words and took their first steps. I was there on their first day of school, and I will be there on their last day of school. And I will be there when they have children of their own and they name their children. And God willing, my children will be by my side as I lay on my deathbed and take my last breaths on this earth.
How can any, I mean, this is a serious question. How can any sane person think that that's okay to allow a kid who is probably, and we know this now, in severe mental distress to change their name at school and hide that from their parents?
Yeah, it's a red flag.
It's ridiculous.
Not a single person in this room will be. Stop putting yourselves, the government, between us parents and our children. We are sick and tired of it. It's not about hating trans people. It's not about any of that. It's about putting yourselves in between us and our kids. We are sick and tired of it. And that's why we have fought this bill. I want you to think about that. We received thousands of emails, thousands of phone calls. Not because thousands of people around Colorado hate trans people. It's because they're sick of the bills we're passing infringing on their rights. And this perhaps may be the most egregious we've seen so far.
I don't think there's any doubt that it's the most egregious. But I have to kind of land on something here that's at least somewhat comedic. And I'm going to tell you right now, Sue, that the video for this is a whole lot better, but I have to share the audio. And this was a traffic stop. What's the date today? The 7th?
The 8th.
Today's the 8th. Thank you very much. So this was the 5th. Was that Monday?
Yep. Yeah.
So 7 p.m. Monday, Springfield, Ohio. Officer Austin Branham conducts a traffic stop on this vehicle where there's an active warrant and a suspended driver's license. And here's what happens.
Hi, how are we doing today? I'm Officer Good. Brandon, Springfield Township Police Department.
Okay, stop it, dog. How are you?
So the reason I stopped you is you are suspended with a warrant for your arrest.
I am.
So do me a favor, turn off the car, put the keys up on the dash, detain you for that warrant, and because you are suspended actively. Oh.
Okay, so they're starting to get her out of the car. You heard the dogs in there, right? She has a raccoon in the front seat. Listen what happened.
Oh, my God.
You heard meth pipe. He's playing with the meth pipe right now.
The raccoon is playing with the meth pipe.
Evidence now.
Well, I don't want him to have that.
Well, that's why I'm going to do it. Hey, buddy.
Huh?
It's okay.
Is that what that is?
Up you, man.
Yeah. Okay. This is what she's smoking meth in.
Okay.
The raccoon's playing with her meth pipe. Oh, there's no one. He's trying to smoke it.
All right. Thanks.
Sue is wincing right now. He literally, the raccoon, put the meth pipe in his mouth in the front seat of the car. They have it on video. She was charged with a bulk amount of methamphetamine, crack cocaine, 3 used glass meth pipes, and they don't know if the raccoon was legal either. We'll see you tomorrow on the Roundtable at 3. This happened earlier today. We were looking at black smoke yesterday, not today.
Habemus Papam. Eminentissimum. Ac reverendissimum Dominum. Dominum Robertum Franciscum. Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae Cardinalem Prevost.
Well, Fred, luckily Fred's here to translate all that and explain what happened, because he's an expert on all this. Wow. He's been the religion. Well, you are. I mean, you've been the religion editor at KMOX for like 45 years now, and you've been all on top of this story. You're contributing to some of the network coverage at CBS. We did talk about some of this at the beginning of the show. My first question would be, do we have a definitive answer? Because we've had conflicting information on whether he's a Cubs or a Sox fan.
And I think we do, and I think you may have brought it up. He spent a year in St. Louis in the 70s, and he was at a parish, the old Immaculate Conception Parish, that's near the old Incarnate Hospital on South Grand.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
He was there for a year. It was before becoming a priest. I think he was taking his orders or right before that. So it was an Augustinian order that took over the parish when it was no longer the old Immaculate Conception. And we found a parishioner then, Stephen Baker, who said, oh, yeah, I knew him. We called him Father Bob, or just Bob, and we'd go out for drinks, and we'd talk a lot of baseball. He loved baseball. He was an avid White Sox fan.
Yeah. Well, his brother said that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel...
So I think we're safe in saying he was a White Sox fan.
Fred, I feel so much better. You have no idea. I was very, very concerned, and I'm guessing a lot of Catholics... I'm not Catholic, but I think a lot of Catholics might have been concerned here in St. Louis. But what do we know at this point? First of all, the process, you indicated this earlier, it didn't really take any longer or maybe even any shorter than the past two selections?
This fell right where everyone thought it might, or everyone, you know, the Catholic Church hoped it would last a short time. 2 days, four votes. And keep in mind that, he didn't get passed on the first day.
But that's not unusual.
Right. That's not unusual. And then they had two votes this morning. And then on that third vote today, which would have been the fourth vote overall, after lunch today, he was elected Pope with a two-thirds majority. 89 of the 133 eligible voting cardinals chose his name. And that was the same time, the same frame as Pope Benedict on the second day of the fourth ballot, and one ballot quicker than Pope Francis. So he was on the fifth ballot on the second day. So the last three popes have all been elected on the second day of the conclave.
Hey, Mark, while you were gone, Fred talked about the fact that a lot of these cardinals are new and haven't ever voted.
Yeah, you're right. And it was a new experience for, I guess it was 108 of the cardinals, because those were
that's
the ones
a lot.
That Pope Francis nominated and elevated to be a cardinal. And this time we had cardinals from 70 different countries represented in the conclave. And when Pope Francis was elected, there were 48 countries represented. So Pope Francis added, 22 more countries that had never had popes before. So a lot of these people were younger, newer. Some didn't speak Italian, which is the common language of the Vatican. So there may have been some communication problem. Not all of them were liberal. Some were from some of the most conservative areas of Africa and that sort of thing. So it was just a very diversified and largest conclave ever. They've never had a conclave with 133 eligible cardinals, 10 from the United States.
Yeah. Because you got to be careful with this stuff, just assuming things. But can you make an assumption that because of the number of cardinals that Pope Benedict appointed, that this is someone that he would really be happy with replacing him? Or is that just
Pope
impossible
Francis?
To say? Yeah, I'm
well,
sorry, Pope
I would,
Francis. Sorry.
I would think Pope Francis would be happy because he did appoint him and brought him back to the Vatican in 2023 and appointed him as a cardinal. And it gave him one of the most important jobs at the Vatican. He was in charge of the office that vets all the new bishops. Mm. So any appointment, if you want to be elevated, would go through him, and he would sign off on it before we would pass it on to Pope Francis. So it's very important to him. A couple other really cool things about him is that he knows he can speak five languages and read two more.
Sure.
So he can read seven.
Like we all can.
And speak five languages. He was seen as not being charismatic. They didn't know if, he'd be the personality that you'd want to go out and do speeches and homilies throughout the world. But judging from what we just saw today from the balcony in the Vatican, he was lively. He was smiling. He was gentle in nature. He was not shocked or didn't look out of the moment at all. It seemed like he could handle it really well. Another interesting thing to see is that he wore the garments that he wore were a bit more regal than what Pope Francis wore.
Really?
Pope Benedict wore lots of red, lots of the old magisterial sort of things of a pope. Pope Francis simplified it, just wore a white cassock, a white thing. This pope came out in more of the red robes, that sort of thing.
But he went to Villanova University.
Yeah,
he was
Villanova.
A mathematician, right?
That's yeah, isn't that something?
That's good, though. Right. Logic is good.
Well, that's not a bad mm-hmm. idea, right?
Yeah. He went to high school and grade school in Chicago. Like I said, grew up on the South Side. Was
but
an altar boy.
Let's circle back to here. He spent how long here in St.
About
Louis?
A year, I think is what it was, in the 70s. And, we're starting to hear from people that remember him as Father Bob. At a very young age.
Go ahead. No, you should go ahead.
I was going to say, once they do this, right, once the smoke comes up, is he immediately made pope and they do the ceremony?
So here's the thing. He's elected pope. The votes are counted and he's, they see he's got 2/3 majority. The senior dean who's inside the Vatican, inside the Sistine Chapel, pulls him aside and says, do you accept this honor?
Mm-hmm.
And, inevitably they say yes.
Has anyone ever said no?
In 1215, I think, there was a pope. There was a chosen pope who ran out of the room and hid until they elected a new pope.
Wowza.
Okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, isn't that something? So, he says yes. And then, they fit him for his robes. They had 3 robes there. You could choose the size that fits you, small, medium, or large. And then each cardinal of the 133 cardinals come up and congratulate him and swear their allegiance to him.
They take selfies. I think
that's
certainly I would if I were.
That's right. And then he goes into the Room of Tears, where it's a private room where all new popes go, and it gives them a chance to release their emotions because they've just been handed a very weighty job that's a life term, kind of like a Supreme Court justice. It's a life term. So he goes into that, and then eventually they make their way back to the balcony. But at the moment that he says he accepts the nomination, that's when he becomes pope. There'll be an official installation ceremony in about a week in St. Peter's Square, and that'll hopefully be outdoors so they can get the hundreds of thousands of people there to witness the inauguration of the very first American pope ever.
But again, to repeat something that I indicated earlier, and just I don't know if anything has changed, but he didn't speak any English today, right?
No, he spoke Italian, Latin, and Spanish. But obviously, he knows English well, and maybe he didn't want to be seen as, as an American pope. And he's not. He's probably, of the 10 cardinals, he's the least American of the American cardinals.
Right. Because
he's been in Peru for, decades. As a missionary, and then he came back to the Vatican, or came back to Chicago for a little bit, and then he was over at the Vatican. So, he split his time. He's an international, he's a world Catholic leader, I would say.
When's the last time we had a pope visit this country?
Pope Francis was here.
Oh, he was.
He did the United Nations. He did Washington.
Okay. There would be...
Pope Benedict was here. Pope John Paul II was
so
here in St. Louis.
So he will likely come here. Yeah, I know that.
But I would think Chicago would be a stop to visit his native land.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right. Well, we'll continue to have Fred's expert coverage. We're going to talk about it tomorrow, of course, on the show. We got the roundtable. I have so much audio that I want to get to here. I'm going to break. And I know Fred indicated, and we're not happy about this because we want you to get some rest, but you still have responsibilities to the network and reporting on some of this as well. But, oh, my goodness, I'm so relieved that he's not indicated because they went early at Wrigley Field. They put the sign up there. The Pope is a Cubs fan. No. Fake media, fake news. What can I say? Audio cut of the day. And I have a bunch of good ones, including the raccoon that was smoking meth in Ohio. You're not going to want to miss that.